Good morning. Anybody want to say hello?
Hi, Nancy. How are you?
Wayne, how are you?
Good, good.
Are you by yourself?
As far as I know.
Oh, my goodness. Was there music?
I know.
Was there music when you came on?
No.
Oh, okay.
But somebody told me there isn't music anymore since Steve set it to come on some way different than we used to.
I wonder if he passed on before anybody and that stops the music probably, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, that could be.
Okay. That's interesting to hear. So how are things out in Kansas? Are you guys still hot?
No, it's beautiful. Daddy. The nights are getting down into the 50s or the upper 40s, and then during the day it's up in the 80s.
Uh-huh.
So it's been really nice, but I suppose you're cooler already.
Our days, we've had this is at least the second, maybe even part of a third week when we've had in the 70s, up, you know, low to mid. Every once in a while we'll have a day when it won't get up to 70. But we've been having one
has arrived.
Great. In the, you know, low to mid 70s, and then at night it can go down into the 50s. In fact, there have been a couple of times, oh, maybe 2 weeks ago, when I turned on the fireplace just to get some warmth.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But it's been really lovely.
Here too.
Yeah. We generally have a nice fall. Trees are turning. Today's supposed to be, I think, like 72, 74. And tomorrow, again, I think one of these days, 77, 78, and only low of 60 at night, which is great.
Good morning.
Good morning, Juanita. How are you?
All right. We're talking about the weather. I actually turned over from air to heat the other day because it was cool in the house.
Oh, my gosh. I haven't been there. I haven't turned mine to go on yet. I'm not ready for that. But the fireplace felt good. A little bit of warmth in that.
Yeah.
Anyone else want to say hello?
Good morning. It's Betty.
Good morning, Betty. How are you?
I'm good.
Yeah. Did you guys get that email yesterday from Char, anybody?
I did. Yes.
But somebody sent it to me. I was just listening yesterday. So if somebody could just pop it in the mail and send me an email with it, I would appreciate reading it.
Betty, you want to go ahead and do that?
Sure.
Would you send it to me, too? I'm not even sure what it is.
I don't have your email, Elaine.
You can send it to me, and I'll send it to her. Just put a note in there to please forward to Elaine. I got it.
Will do.
Oh, okay, thank you.
Before I begin, and I last week I kind of said that I was going to go over what was on the docs. One day last week, I don't know if any of you are watching the docs. Anybody watching them? The title of it was Secrets Your Doc May Not Be Telling You. Just want to tell you very quickly and briefly what happened to me last night. It was kind of scary. Marty and I were standing in the kitchen taking our
trouble has arrived.
Linda Morse
has arrived.
He said something funny. And I had a mouthful of water and two joints in my mouth.
Trouble. I got to go get Joanne now. I dialed probably at least eight times. So anyway, hold on. I'll be back.
And I all of a sudden I started choking. I turned around to the sink and spit out what was in my mouth. And I don't think I've ever come so close stopping breathing in my life. And I think it was on Oz within the last week or two that he had on a segment about choking. Anybody remember hearing that?
At high milk?
Yes?
Yes.
I didn't hear what you said.
I said that's when he was showing, leaning over a chair or a counter or whatever to do the Heimlich on yourself?
Correct.
Okay.
I just stated the sink. I mean, it was water that I was choking on, and I'm thinking this has to either go up or down. And I just realized this morning probably what was stopping it was I think his shoes get inflamed really quickly with all the coughing and start to swell. When I finally was able to breathe, I immediately went and put a flex in my chest because it was burning.
Mm.
And I just sat there for 5 minutes or so, just holding it on my chest, and it seemed to help. But it was kind of weird.
Mm.
What did you choke on?
Water. And I'm thinking I have 30 seconds before I lose consciousness. And poor Marty didn't know what to do. Had no clue. And after I
have
finally
problems.
And I said to him what he needed to, you know, he said, what was I supposed to do? I said, I can just hear it now. He's calling Mindy and said, well, Mom was choking. I didn't know what to do, and she died. And it's like, we need to really learn what to do in a case like this. They don't talk enough about what to do when somebody's choking.
Yeah.
It was only water, and that's what really got to me. Because I immediately spit out what was in my mouth, which was the two joints and the water.
Was that what was on Oz yesterday?
It was within the past.
Has arrived.
I forget what day it was, but it was in the past week or so. He had a segment on it, and what you should and shouldn't do, and if you're what to do if you're alone. Which can happen when you're alone. And I've choked on water before, but never like this.
And what do you do if you're alone?
I literally was not, no, Marty was here, but I was literally not able to take a breath.
Mm. And what do you do if you're alone, Nancy?
You can go up against a counter or the back of a chair, a chair that's strong enough that you're not going to pull it over, and do it to yourself behind one.
Or bend over backwards, you mean?
Forward.
Oh, I thought you said back up against the chair.
No. Where your diaphragm is.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Yeah, or the counter.
Counter would be easy.
But there was nothing stuck there. I mean, literally, I don't think there was really any, but I think that I immediately, with the amount of coughing that I was doing and the depth of the coughing, I think it started to swell quickly. So Heimlich wouldn't have done any good. There was nothing to come up. It was only water. And what I don't think that I don't know.
It would have forced air through, though.
That's true. You're right. That's hopefully, yeah. And I kept thinking 30 seconds, 30 seconds. I would suspect that there was probably maybe 10 to 15 and I wasn't breathing. Not that I couldn't hold my breath for 10 or 15 seconds, but I can. Belabor, but it's something to be aware of, guys. It's just something to know about. Anyway, last week on the 25th, which was Wednesday, as I said, the docs had a whole program on secrets your doc may not be telling you, and it was kind of disturbing. And I have never, all the years I've been watching them, taken as many pages of notes. I have 2, 4, almost 5 pages of notes from that one program. Normally I'll take a half a page, if that. There are times I take a couple of lines. But if you guys are interested, I'd like to go through what I wrote down.
Sure. Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Medical mistakes are the third leading cause of death in the United States. If overtreatment and medical mistakes were a disease, it would make a worse disease after heart attack and cancer. Insurance companies require a big part of the problem is that insurance companies require a diagnosis on the first visit. So you go to see a specialist, whether it's a psychiatrist or a whatever in any field, and the insurance company requires them to put a diagnosis on what's submitting. Here you are, a person this doctor has never seen before and doesn't know anything about you, and in the 10 minutes he's allotted to see you, has to come up with a diagnosis. And, you know, that's one of their big complaints. I was just ad-libbing right then, but I'm going to read again. Docs have to jump to conclusion about the diagnosis before they really know the patient. Up to 30% of what they do in healthcare may be unnecessary. Patients don't understand the risks they take when they get tests done on them. Docs are given quotas to see so many patients per hour. The quickest way to get a patient out of the office happy and satisfied with the visit is to give them a prescription. I'm going to repeat that. Quickest way to get a patient out of the office who is happy and satisfied with the visit is to give them a prescription. Docs don't like these quotas. Every doctor will tell you he's seen...
has arrived.
Every doc will tell you he's seen patients die from preventable medical mistakes. Get a second opinion. Biggest problem now is overtreatment. 1 in 3 of everything they do, a third of the entire healthcare expenditure, may be going to things like fraud, unnecessary tests, unnecessary treatments, meds you don't need. And then before I get to the next page, I have in the this guy who was on is a Martin McCary. He's from Johns Hopkins. He wrote a book on Unaccountable, What Hospitals Won't Tell You and How Transparency Can Revolutionize Healthcare. Sounds like quite a book. And then there was a doctor, Lena Wen, from George Washington Emergency Department, George Washington University. She wrote, When Doctors Don't Listen, How to Avoid Misdiagnosis and Unnecessary Tests. Going on to the program. We have a system of good people in an ugly network of perverse incentives that rewards the wrong things and has a culture that is a reflex culture. You think diagnosis, treatment, and to lower the cholesterol, they give you statin. You have a reflex that's ready to go. What you lose sometimes is the appropriateness. When is it right to treat? This doctor, Wen, sees over-treatment and over-testing all the time. Docs need to stop butting heads and come together. Nobody's perfect. Our system is broken. Overstatement, over-testing, over-treatment, over-testing, driven by a lot of factors. Defensive medicine plays a role. Malpractice threat. She says there's, quote, cookbook medicine, and that's bad medicine. It's a deeper issue. Instead of listening to the patient, he says he'll order some tests for you as he ordered for everyone else with the same symptoms. And that's called cookbook medicine. Everybody gets the same thing. This follows a recipe, and they're not listening for your care and your body. In the ER, if you follow the recipe and go to court, they say you followed the recipe and we won't charge you. Docs are penalized for thinking outside the box. The number one drive of malpractice claims isn't the actual event. It's a patient feeling dissatisfied. They're shut out of a closed-door culture. That's why people sue. They're angry. Patients and people are hungry for and they want honesty in healthcare. Docs are trying to do the right thing. How much are misplaced financial incentives playing a role in decision or over-treatment or over-testing? Docs are under quotas. How many operations have they done this month? Doctors are saying that they don't want to be paid purely on quantity and volume. They want to be paid on quality. Docs are on our side, the patient's side. They need better incentives to do the right thing. Having trust with your MD is essential. At the same time, trust your gut. They tell you to avoid unnecessary procedure. If it doesn't feel right, listen to your gut. In the ER, it's rare to find someone you wouldn't trust. Travis actually said that. If you feel uncomfortable, be your own advocate. Speak up. Do you really need to do this? Is what you're supposed to ask the doctor. What happens if we wait? What are my alternatives? If you don't speak up, no one else will. 80% of diagnoses can be made based just on your story. Cookbook medicine is not good for medicine. The symptoms you have, the history of what's going on, you should say, wait, this is me. And this is the Dr. Wen talking. I'm different from everyone else who comes in. Let me tell you my story and how it's different from everyone else's story. Americans spend $2.5 trillion, that's T as in Tom, on healthcare. Much of this spending is unnecessary. Every time you're told you need a test or procedure, always ask why. How is it going to change my management?
Has left the conference.
Every test has risks. If a doc doesn't mention risks or alternatives to testing, that's a big red flag. That's interesting, because how many docs tell you right up front the risk or an alternative? Number two, next important, what if I don't have this done? Can I have it done in 6 months or a year? Can I have the surgery done down the road? 1 in 2 kids who go to the hospital with a minor head trauma end up with a CT scan. Most could have watchful monitoring and not expose the kids to the radiation. Every single test has risks. The cardiology test, EKG, stress test, catheters. People go to the ER, complications. Complications from these tests, at the end of the day, get someone over-medicalized and over-treated. 51% follow-up x-ray studies, CT scans, MRIs, recommended as follow-up is unnecessary. Don't need to chase nothing. Docs today are going out on a limb to not do the testing. They are waiting and watching. The docs are now defending docs in court because they want to do what's right, whether wait and watch or do the test now, not what they're obligated to do because of some paranoia of defensive medicine. Patients need to partner with docs about this. Can't change the system without both docs and patients. And then he has I have a note to check there to the site. For a list of top 10 procedures every patient and doc should question. Haven't done that yet, but I plan on looking for that one. One in four Americans now qualify for a diagnosis of mental disorder. Drug companies spend two times as much marketing and lobbying as they do on research, twice as much on marketing and lobbying as on research. These ads are remarkably misleading, what we see on TV, called disease mongering. Selling the ill is to sell the pill. Accurate diagnosis can save a life and certainly improve it. Inaccurate diagnosis can ruin a life. We're terribly over-treating. People don't need it. Americans spend $30 billion, B as in boy, on antipsychotic and antidepressants every year. And then he had a psychiatrist on, Alan Francis, who wrote Saving Normal.
Has left the conference.
These are tens of millions of people on psychiatric drugs. Almost impossible to get a disability unless you have a psychiatric diagnosis. Very often they're carelessly made. 80% of psych meds are being prescribed by non-psychiatrists, often with little training, excessively influenced by drug companies for just 7 minutes. So they see a patient for 7 minutes and put them on these heavy drugs. They're jumping prematurely to a conclusion.
Has arrived.
Psychiatrists tried to be conservative. Since this Dr. Francis wrote the book 20 years ago, we've had 3 epidemics affecting kids. 40 times increase in childhood bipolar disorder. Kids get really dangerous treatment that makes them gain lots of weight. 40 times increase in autism. ADD has tripled. That's in the last 20 years. Some people who need treatment who wouldn't have gotten it are getting it now. It doesn't account for these enormous increases. It's a real tragedy. Tremendous paradox is they're overtreating people who don't need it and terribly undertreating the people who do. Only 1 in 3 of the people with severe depression get to see a mental health professional or doc in the previous year. People who really need the meds aren't getting it. Many people who are getting the meds really don't need it. They feel sadness, loss of interest, loss of appetite, less energy for 2 weeks after the loss of a loved one, and they are being diagnosed with a major depressive disorder. These are normal feelings for someone who just had a very important loved person in their life die, and yet they're being treated as if they have a major depression. It's part of life. We shouldn't be medicalizing normal grief, substituting medical rituals for the rich rituals we have to deal with death. We should deal with people where they are, not turn them into patients. It's not always about a second opinion. It's about a good opinion. It's okay to go to a mental health professional. Given a psychiatric diagnosis, he has 3 tips. Number 1, be informed. Ask lots and lots of questions. Don't be satisfied with obscure answers. Get clear answers. If you don't, the second, even third, or fourth opinion. Number 2, probably seeing the doc on the worst day of your life. Natural resiliency, time, change of circumstances. Most people who go to a doc and get antidepressants are going to be better in a couple of weeks. Shouldn't jump at a diagnosis prematurely. Number 3, very important for people to take this seriously. Getting a diagnosis can change your whole life. It should be as serious a decision as who you marry and the house you buy. Shouldn't be based on a 7 minutes with the doc. A quick and premature judgment that's from the hip. Single best thing people can do when they have minor problems is exercise. For mild problems, everyone should be very cautious about the overselling of medicine. The idea that the mild, everyday, expectable problems of life are mental disorders. It's a chemical imbalance that requires a chemical solution. This is drug company salesmanship. It's not good practice. Solutions to overdiagnosis. 1, diagnosis system needs to be tightened. 2, docs need to be reprogrammed from propaganda they've received and accepted from drug companies. Number 3, drug companies can advertise directly to consumers only in the U.S. That should be stopped. They market aggressively to docs. That should be monitored. Number 4, insurance companies should not require a diagnosis on the first visit. Once you get that diagnosis, it can be hard. It can haunt you for life. Easy to give a diagnosis, hard to get rid of it. Number 5, people shouldn't be demanding meds and thinking that's going to be a solution for everyday problems. Very often, treatment is worse than the problem you had. I very briefly mentioned that they say for minor problems, the best thing to do is exercise. I just wrote down one sentence. They talked about it for a bit or two and how important that is for the whole body, whatever your problem is. Continuing, docs operate on the wrong body part as often as 20 times a week. Wow. Millions of mistakes could be avoided with a simple fix. Better communication between patients and docs, whether it's surgery or anything else, there's a big disconnect and docs aren't listening. Just aside here for a second, each time when I had my knee done, my doc put his initials on that knee. And the first time he put it on, I said, why are you writing my husband's initials on my knee? They have the same initials. So yeah, I have heard of docs doing this. I know of a doc personally. It was very clearly specified in my pre-op instructions to not mark the site of surgery. But they did it in the pre-op before the surgery. So it's important that you are alert enough to make sure that it's being marked what you're in there for. Continuing. Patients aren't speaking up. Patients have to feel empowered to speak up. There's a miscommunication all the time, and this really has to change. If patients don't speak up, it's their health at risk. Having only 10 seconds before a doc interrupts you, when you go to your doc, you literally, they have actually tested this. When you start to speak, it's 10 seconds before you're interrupted usually. Three best ways to talk with your doc. One, talk about your story and not your symptoms. Don't just say you have a really bad headache. Say my headache started suddenly and then got so bad I had to lie down and couldn't go to work. That gives the doc a much better idea. And, you know, you've set a picture already. Number two, start with a high impact statement and really get your doc's attention. I was so short of breath I walked from my bed to the bathroom. That gets your doc's attention. Number three, practice if you're going to a senator or a boss and had only 10 seconds to tell your story, you'd really practice it. Health should be no different. Practice before you go. Write down before you get to your doc. This started at 8 a.m. 2 days ago, sharp pain on the right side of my head, so you don't forget. Take an advocate. They're what they call history and physical is the history, that's the patient's story. His story. Docs need to listen better. If the patients tell the story the way the Dr. Nguyen just recommended above, we can communicate better and hopefully prevent a lot of these unnecessary errors. Then they went on talking about the BMI. And 18.5 to 24.9 is normal for women. Lower than 18.5 is underweight. Four signs it's time to consider finding a new doctor. One, be cautious of free samples. They're never really free. Too much drug company influence is possible. In the long run, it may cause you much more harm than good. Number two, doc who doesn't tell you about all the options. Minimally invasive options. Option of mistreatment, option to watchfully wait and maybe do something down the road. Number three, watch out if your doc doesn't listen to you. If you're leaving the doc more confused than when you went in, and if your doc doesn't answer all of your questions. Number four, your doc pretends to know everything about everything. It's time to consider looking. He's never met anyone, and this is Travis talking, never met anyone who knows everything about everything. Docs are on our side. And you can also check their website for a list of what every patient needs. That's it in a nutshell, guys. It was quite a program and disturbing.
Nancy?
Yes.
And what was that 18.5 was normal for women? What was that test?
It's the BMI. 18.5.
Okay.
0.9. And, you know, with the idea of treating, and I didn't go into a lot, I didn't add any other notes to that, but it had to have been with the idea of treating for obesity or underweight or whatever. It's, you know, it's a fair enough range. So.
Thank you.
Yeah. Anybody have any comments?
What were those doctors' names that you had, that Martin McCary? And he had written the book.
Yeah. Countable. Martin McCary, McCary. He's at Johns Hopkins. What hospital? Unaccountable. And then the subtitle, what hospitals won't tell you and how transparency can revolutionize healthcare. Then there was Alina Wen, W-E-N, George Washington University Medical Emergency Medicine. When doctors don't listen, how to avoid misdiagnosis and unnecessary tests. And then there was Saving Normal. Alan Francis is a psychiatrist. So there
they
are.
I was going to say they had a program on Channel 8 here, which is our PBS station, on ADHD,
mm-hmm.
and saying that the doctors accept what the teachers tell them about the kids being ADHD, and had mothers on there whose kids had been diagnosed as that, and if they wouldn't put the kids on medication, they lose their kids.
Yeah.
It was awful.
It's so much easier to teach a class when kids are in control. And that's why they go to a doctor and say, this kid has ADHD.
Yeah. And the doctors listen.
Right. Doctors don't want to do it. I mean, it's
being diagnosed by teachers who don't have any knowledge.
It's a vicious cycle. Well, their knowledge is that this kid is out of control in the classroom.
Yeah. And they don't want to take to work with them, so.
And they put these kids on such powerful drugs. It's scary.
Yeah.
It's going on for a long time already.
Well, they were saying some of these, they were even attributing Columbine, the shootings, to kids being on medication that was giving them hallucinations and stuff.
Not surprising. What gets to me is all of these, so many kids have been drugged. And then when they get to be 18 or even younger and experimenting with real drugs, they wonder why. This
yeah.
is what you've trained me to do. I don't, you know, it's just so stupid. How can they not realize that? Anyway, hopefully it opens our eyes a little bit better to hear some of this.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
And that part about when to consider changing doctors. If any of you remember 3.5 years ago, we crossed that bridge and have not looked back.
Thank you for all the good information, Nancy. That was awesome.
Thank you. Yes, it was. Well, it was disturbing to me, and I thought that hopefully we can learn from it. Anybody have any final questions, thoughts?
No, I just need to go back and listen to the call again so I can write more notes.
I spent a long time listening to this program to take this kind of notes. It was almost like some of the Oz ones that are so intricate, but I felt it was important to do, and as I said, I've never taken this many notes on the docs before.
Yeah.
I could see that Travis was clearly disturbed by what he was listening to also. So. Well, guys, thanks for bearing with me. Hopefully it was more than I felt like times were coming out. Reading my writing, I was amazed that I could read most of it. So,
thank
have
you.
A good day. You're welcome.
Thank
and,
you,
we'll be back tomorrow.
Thanks, Nancy. Great information.
Thank
yes.
you.
Yeah,
my grandkids.
Thank
well,
you.
Well, you're welcome. Have a great day, everybody.
Bye.
Thank you.
To learn more about NECAN, we encourage you to contact the person who suggested you listen to this information.